Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in New Haven, Connecticut, and was a three-time All-American running back at Syracuse University. In 1967, he was the first-round draft choice of the Denver Broncos. After a glorious nine-year career, he earned a law degree from the University of Denver and owned auto dealerships in three states. Elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2010, he's still known to Bronco fans as the franchise. His name? Floyd Little. And we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the franchise, known to the Denver Bronco fans as the franchise, Floyd Little. Floyd, what an honor to have you.
Well, thank you. My honor.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Well, it was tough. We lived in Waterbury, Connecticut, in an area where they were army barracks, and they converted them to houses for people that were really getting Social Security. Most of the people up there were hard pressed to find jobs and make a living. And I was next to the youngest. My three sisters are older than I, and I have one brother older than me, and both of them are gone. One served two terms in Vietnam, and the other, my older brother, was a really pretty good athlete, but he got hung up with the wrong crowd, and we were asked to leave the place that we lived in Waterbury and wound up moving to New Haven, which was a blessing for me because I discovered football, because I was baseball and basketball. And I learned to play football, but it was tough times, and as it was in the 50s.
What was the biggest thing, Floyd, you learned from your mom?
Well, my mom was really always hard-pressed to put food on the table for us. But she was persistent. She was a good mother. She did all she could for us, and patience, understanding, committed to her young children, the hope that they would have a better way. And she did all she could do with one lady with six kids. It's very challenging for her. But I watched her, and I watched her struggle. I watched her cry, and because she couldn't provide a lot of things for us. It was very challenging for her, not having a husband to help raise these six kids. But we all stayed together, and she did the best she could.
You got kicked out of school in seventh grade. What happened?
Well, I was angry. I was pretty strong as a seventh grader and beat up the bully at a school in seventh grade. So everybody kind of feared me because I was a strong and angry young man, and because I didn't have a father. And then I had a fight with a student, and then the teacher came to assist the student, and I hit the teacher, and then another teacher came, and I hit that teacher as well. Then he put me in the room with the father of the young man that I had beat up, and he wanted to avenge his son's loss, and I beat him up too. So they kicked me out of school, and all I can think about is, oh boy, you know, I didn't want to face my mom, knowing that I was out of school now at seventh grade. What am I going to do? So I sat on the curb and was very emotional sitting on the curb because I wasn't a bad kid. I was just misguided. And I had a vision for my late dad that came to me and said he had chosen me to take his place and to do what he couldn't do and to finish what he couldn't finish. So I came to my senses.
How was it, Floyd Little, you went to Syracuse University?
Syracuse University was a school that was just one of the 47 opportunities that I had after leaving Bordentown Military. Syracuse was not even on the radar. It was Notre Dame, Army, and I think it was Penn State. Those were the schools that were on the radar. But having been recruited by General MacArthur in New York City as a military school graduate, I drove into New York with some alums and met General MacArthur at the Waldorf, and he had a lot of famous Yankees in his room, and he tried to convince me to go to Army, and I was convinced, being a military school graduate, that I could actually become the first African-American general. And he had assured me if I'd gone to West Point and got through that process, there was a good chance of that happening. So I went to West Point, went through their physical endurance test, went through their medical test, and came home. And 2 days later, Ernie Davis showed up at my house and invited me to dinner and met my parents, my mom and my sisters, I should say, and my brother. And we went out to dinner, and neither one of us had ever had steak and lobster, so we ordered steak and lobster. And then we excused ourselves and went to the men's room, and there we talked for a half hour or more. I'm not sure how much time had gone by, but he had given me all the ins and outs of Syracuse and what it would be like to come to Syracuse and how they treated him and the opportunities he had there and the help he had from a tutoring standpoint. It was a great place for him, and he really enjoyed it. And Jim Brown had recruited him, and he was looking at me following their footsteps. So I looked at him, and I looked at my watch, and I said, "Bye, it's been about 35, 40 minutes. Let's go eat. I'll go to Syracuse." But I really hadn't decided to go to Syracuse. I was still leaning toward either Notre Dame or Army. And then 3 months later, he died. And that's when I decided to go to Syracuse because I had given my word. And I don't own anything more valuable than that. My word is my bond. I gave him my word that I'd go to Syracuse, and I kept my word.
We're talking to Floyd Little, and when he talks about Ernie Davis, that was the 1961 Heisman Trophy winner, the first African-American to win the Heisman Trophy. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Crisula, and we're with the three-time All-American from Syracuse in 64, 65, and 66. You had quite a backfield. Larry Zonka, yourself, and the coach of the New York Giants, now the Super Bowl-winning coach, Tom Coughlin. How was it, Floyd Little, that Syracuse got all these fantastic runners in the late 50s and 60s?
Well, it's easy because the coach didn't like to throw the ball. Vince Waltzweiler was our coach, and he always used to say there's three things can happen when you throw a pass, and two of them are bad. And that's what Ernie Davis told me. That's what John Mackey said. John Mackey was a running back as well. He was Ernie Davis' roommate, but he went to tight end so that both of them can play because both of them were running backs. And he used to always say, "Hell, I know I'm not going to catch a lot of passes because the coach don't like throwing passes, but I want to block for Ernie." But we were able to acquire the running backs because of the style of game that he played and the kind of players that he's had, and Jim Brown and Ernie, and then I came along, and then Zonka was here. Billy Hunter, the guy who is the executive director of the NBA, he was a teammate of mine here, along with the great Charlie Brown, a great Jim Nance, who turned out to be an All-American, two-time NCAA wrestling champion. He was running back here. Daryl Johnston with the Dallas Cowboys, who was Emmitt Smith's running mate, was also here. Rod Conrad, great fullback for the Miami Dolphins for many, many years. He was also running back here. We had some great runners. We were a school of runners. Joe Morris, great running back for the Giants, also won here. Donovan McNabb, Don McPherson, Robert Drummond. I mean, all of us were runers here in some way, one way or the other. But Syracuse has been a school that has really had the opportunity and has been blessed to have a lot of great running backs here. I just happened to be one of them. that's a part of a legacy that Jim Brown started, and it's been great for me and having a chance to be back again now after all these years working with the young people. It's just been great for me.
1967, it's the first year of the common draft between the AFL, the NFL, and surprisingly, the Denver Broncos pick you with the sixth pick. You get a $10,000 bonus. Joe Willie, three picks later with the Jets, gets $400,000 bonus.
Here's the deal. It's so funny. It's surprising because the Jets were a team that Weeb Eubank, who was the coach, and Sonny Werblin, watched Syracuse. A lot of Syracuse alums were friends of the Jets during those days. And they used to come to all of our games, especially when we were close in New York or Buffalo or wherever. And unbelievable, they wanted me. They wanted me in the worst way, and they had committed to me that should I get a chance to last to the ninth pick in the draft, that they would draft me. Not only would they draft me, they would give me the same deal they gave Joe. And, of course, that's the year to come and draft. And it happened prior to the draft that this commitment was made to me. But they would have fulfilled their commitment if I could have lasted to the ninth pick. I know that several general managers and coaches had called me during the draft, asked me if I would be available, and I told them no. I was already committed to go to the Jets. I talked to Vince Lombardi, who says, I got a chance to draft you. Would you be available? No. The general manager, Jim Finks, he was left Chicago, and he was at Minnesota. He says, there's an opportunity to draft you. Could you be available? And I told him no. So he drafted, Alan Page, Gene Washington, and Clint Jones. Same with Baltimore, who took the first pick with Bubba Smith. There was a chance for me to be drafted before the ninth pick, which the Jets had. I had to make sure that the Jets would get me. Well, we had a guy named Val Pinchback, who used to be the sports information director at Syracuse, who is now with the AFL with Al Davis. And that was the time during the merger. Val Pinchback went to Syracuse. Al Davis went to the Raiders. And when it was time to draft, our coach, Lou Saban, asked Val Pinchback, what do you think about Floyd Little? He says, well, what do you mean? We're going to draft Gene Upshaw. He says, well, can Floyd Little be a leader? Would he be a good draft choice for us? You were at Syracuse with him. You should know this. And Val Pinchback says, it doesn't matter. We all, as a team of coaches, decided to draft Gene Upshaw. And Saban says, I'm going to draft Floyd Little. So by drafting me, the sixth player before I got to the ninth player, cost me $390,000, which I haven't yet recovered because I signed for $10,000, and I was offered the same deal that Joe Namath got for $400,000, and therefore it was a common draft. I didn't have an option to go with the NFL or the AFL or the AFC. It was either one of those. You had to go to one or the other, and I never got a chance. So, but, you know, it was the greatest thing that happened to me to be drafted by the Broncos. I loved playing for the Denver fans. I loved playing in Denver. Even though I played with 17 quarterbacks and 45-plus offensive linemen, I still had an opportunity to enjoy myself as a player with some great teammates and some great fans.
Floyd Little, you were the captain the first year and every year thereafter for all 9 years, and you're still today known as the franchise.
It's very rare that a freshman or a rookie becomes a captain of a professional franchise, but we had 26 rookies that year, and I was one of the guys that they felt would be a good leader, and my name was easy to spell, L-I-T-T-L-E, and they voted for me, and I was the captain for the entire time I was with the Denver Broncos, 9 consecutive seasons. And it was a job, but we got through it. And when I left the team, they went to the Super Bowl the following year. So I put them in pretty good shape. Charlie Johnson was my quarterback. Bobby Maples was my center. And when Charlie and I retired, they had a great football team that took them to the Super Bowl against Dallas in 77.
Floyd Little, who's the best you ever saw?
The best player?
Yes.
Who was a better player than Jim Brown in professional football? But if you're talking about just players overall, I look at him, I look at Michael Jordan, I look at Muhammad Ali, and I look at Sugar Ray Leonard. Those are the guys who really set the standards, who set the bar at a point where you can't usually get talent and also desire. You know, God only gives you either one or the other. It's a mistake when you get all of the ability and all of the drive to go with it. I mean, it just doesn't happen. But I saw it in three or four other athletes. And as I've been able to look at different players and style of player, when I saw Sugar Ray Leonard tell his trainer that not to stop the fight when he was in there with Thomas Hearns, and he says, I got to stop it. He says, just give me one more round. Just give me one more round. That's the heart of a champion. He knocked Thomas Hearns out of the ring, won the championship. These kinds of things that I see in people that you don't see on the regular. People sometimes look for a place to lay down, look for an opportunity to quit. I've not seen any quit. So these are the guys that I look at and see how they've, made themselves the kind of athlete, the kind of person that they became. And if you can be half of what these guys have been able to do, then you should be successful.
A quote from John Elway, quote, "In my opinion, Floyd Little is the greatest Bronco of us all." And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with Floyd Little, the famous, phenomenal running back of the Denver Broncos. Floyd, I heard you tell a story a couple years ago about being tackled by Dick Butkus. Could you share that story with us?
Yeah, Dick and I were on the All-American team. I was All-American as a sophomore, so Dick was a senior, and he went to Chicago with Gale Sears. We were our friends then, and a couple years later, when I get drafted by the Broncos, we play Chicago, and I believe it was in Denver. And it seems like it was played between the 40s, because every time we would miss it, we would go for it and didn't make it. But I had developed an opportunity to not let anybody ever know that they hurt you. I mean, a lot of these players, they hit you, and they take a look at you to see if they hurt you in any way. So my philosophy was always never let them know they hurt you. And in one particular play, Dick Butkus hit me so hard. So I didn't want him to know that he hurt me. So I looked at him and I said, Dick, you still are able to do all the things you used to do. I'm still proud of you. He said, you okay, Floyd? I said, boy, I tell you what, they can say whatever they want to say about you, but Dick Butkus is the same old Dick. He says, Floyd, are you okay? I said, Dick, I'm telling you, you can still hit. He says, are you okay? I says, why are you asking me if I'm okay? He said, because you're in the wrong huddle. Your huddle is back that way. And I had to, for the first time, leave the field, because I can see myself now in the huddle of the Bears talking to Dick Butkus as Doug Buffon and the rest of the Bears looked on. And as I walked off the field, everybody was like, what are you doing in the Bears huddle? A referee was like, what are you doing over here? So, yeah, that's the story where Dick Butkus hit me so hard that I didn't know what huddle to go into. So it was a pretty good story.
Floyd Little, what has football taught you about life?
Well, football is life in itself. It's a whole different culture. It teaches you teamwork and making a contribution and being the best that you can be and rising to the occasion and participating in something that you're not have not been expected to participate in. So football itself in general is taught me so much about me, about life, about people, and the people that participate in the game. It's just so much that the game has taught me how to prepare, how to commit, how to have a desire that's higher than you can ever imagine, how to make the sacrifices that you need to succeed in life. It teaches you how to be a better person in life by the trials and tribulations and things you go to, and how you don't fail if you don't stop trying. I played on a team that didn't win a lot of games, but I never stopped trying. So it taught me how to continue to strive for perfection. And it also helped in your attitude. You know, that's the only thing that you have 100% control over is your attitude. And it was such that as a football player, the commitment, the discipline to get up, the discipline to practice, the discipline to take care of yourself, the discipline to eat better, the discipline to train harder, the discipline to compete at the highest level possible, and to not leave, not take anything off the field with you when you come. Every game, I would want to be in the locker room so exhausted that someone had to help me into the shower. That was the level of me never saying, I wish that I had, or I should have. If we can go through life and never say those two things, then we would have so much success in our lives because we would have done everything that we possibly could.
In 1975, Floyd Little received his law degree from the University of Denver Law School, and for 30-plus years, he owned auto dealership, Ford dealerships, in Denver, Seattle, and Santa Barbara. Floyd, you're eligible to get into the Football Hall of Fame starting in 1980. And for 30 years, you don't make it every year. And then you get this call in 2010. What was that like?
Unbelievable. It was so real because I had been passed over so many years. I had always thought that it was an individual sport, not a team sport. And what I used to hear from most people is you never played in the Super Bowl. What has that got to do with it? And then with the voters, I would write letters to voters and ask the voters, I'm always asked, what year did you go in? It's not a question of whether or not I was in. The question was, did you go in 81 or 82? And I says, why do you want to know? I got a $50 bet that you went in 81. I says, what did he say? He says, you went in 82. I says, what, would you believe I've never even been nominated? And people were like, you have got to be kidding me. You've never been nominated? You're not in Pro Football Hall of Fame? No. Wow, that's unbelievable. Got to a point where John Mackey wrote a letter to the Hall of Fame and said, if you can't find a place for Floyd Little in Pro Football Hall of Fame, take me out and put him in. So all of these years of people asking me what year, all of these years that people wanted to know why, all of these years I'm asking the same questions to those that make it happen, why? And the reasons were insignificant for me. They were reasons of, well, I don't know. I thought you were in. Actual voters would say, you're not in? I thought you were in. Are you kidding me? So when it finally happened, when I got the call from Joe Hargan that morning, it was like an unbelievable opportunity. First of all, I was still happy that I was still alive to experience it and that my family could experience it with me. So as I sat on the bed and thought about the times that I played and the lives that I had helped to change and the contributions that I made to a sport that I love so much, it was like, wow, being one half of 10% of all the players that's ever played in professional football, it was an unbelievable time for me in my life. I'm still reveling in the joy of being a Pro Football Hall of Famer. They asked me after the Super Bowl if I would talk to the new incoming class, the six new, Butler, Demonte Dawson, Dolman, Cortez Kennedy, Curtis Martin, Willie Rolfe. And I talked with them on Monday about what it is like to be in Pro Football Hall of Fame. And as I shared my experiences with these new enshrinees, they're not inductees yet until the first week of August, I told them how special it was. And I told them that if you ever feel bad, if you're not feeling good and you want to feel sorry for yourself, just put on this gold jacket that I'm wearing today. That will make you so much better. And feel so much better. You will have nothing else to worry about because you are one tenth of 1% of all the players that's ever played that's got one of these. That ought to make you feel pretty good.
Floyd Little, let's go back to the first Friday in August of 2010, and you go to your first Hall of Fame luncheon with the other Hall of Famers. What was that like?
Oh, unbelievable. The crowd that was there, they said it was the biggest crowd in the history because we had two great players coming in, and Jerry Rice and Emmitt Smith. It was so many people there. I mean, as you walk through the crowds, the luncheons, and the people are yelling and you're screaming your name and waving banners and you know, wearing your jersey. It was like, wow, your family is there celebrating with you. It was an unbelievable experience.
We're talking to Floyd Little. When we come back, we'll ask him about his son being the presenter when he went into the Football Hall of Fame. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with the franchise known in Denver as the franchise Floyd Little. Floyd, your son was the one that presented you at Canton. He's a lawyer, he's your advisor, he's your lawyer, your advisor, and your best friend. What was that like to have your son Mark present you?
Boy, it's surreal because we are really, really good buddies. He's not only my son, he's my best friend. We talk on a regular. And having him there, having gone through what he went through in the mid-80s, when he was shot on the campus of USC and on the way to the hospital, he flatlined. They had to shock him back twice. And he almost didn't make it. So we celebrate his life every year since 1989, since he got shot. So when I see him and all that he had gone through there for me, I know it was just, it had to be. It was just written. Mark would be the guy, when I did get in the Hall of Fame, that would present me. And what a great job he did. And we talked about so many things up to this. He wrote the first letter to the Hall of Fame when I was with him in Syracuse at a function. Somebody asked me what year did I go in because they had a bet with their buddies, and I mentioned it earlier. And he said he saw something in my face that he had never seen. And he wrote the first letter asking why that my dad is not in. So when he wrote the first letter, and he copied me on it, I says, if I ever get an opportunity to go into Pro Football Hall of Fame, you'd be the guy to present me. And it happened, you know, so many years later, but it did happen. And having him here to be there for me, it was so real.
Floyd Little, I'm struck by how humble you are. You know, when you think of the NFL, you think of macho trash talk. You're very humble. How was it you were so successful and so humble?
Well, I don't know. It's a part of me. I'm just a person that always had been told that I wasn't big enough, strong enough, smart enough, or fast enough to compete at any level. And I think it's up to us as people to decide when we had enough. I don't know that I want anybody to count me out. I want to be the kind of person that I am. I want to take responsibility for what takes place in my life. I don't want, you know, I love people. I greet people. I meet people. I have time to talk to people. I'm back at Syracuse University now as a special assistant to the AD. Part of my function here is, to influence the lives of young people. I got a role every day of people wanting to talk to me about success, about opportunity, about pitfalls and obstacles, and help me through it. It's challenging navigating your way through life today. I have found a way to get through, and I enjoy sharing it with all those that want to hear about it. And that's what makes me the kind of person that I can give a piece of me, because somebody gave it to me. Somebody had to take time for me. All I want to do is pass it on and pay it forward so that somebody else can have that same desire to help someone else along the way.
Floyd Little, family is extremely important to you. Talk to the dads who are listening tonight.
Well, I think you have to be a supporter of your child in any and all things they want to do. You can't live your life vicariously through theirs. You have kids that's born with a lot of grace and a lot of talent. But one of the things that everybody needs to understand that all of us have a grace or a blessing that God has given us. We have to find whatever that passion is that we have, and we have to develop the skill every day to reach that, realize that passion that we have, to fulfill that grace that we've been blessed with. So I would say that I would be supportive. I have a daughter who's a Broadway performer. I have one who's got her doctorate degree. I have a son who's a lawyer. I didn't encourage them to do anything other than what they wanted to do, and I stood behind them, and I helped them along the way. I was that shoulder for them to stand on. I was that person to say, yes, you can. I was that person that says, what can I do to help you reach your goals in life, regardless of what they are? I have a wife today who's gone back to school, a full-time student, been out of school for 30 years, and she's back at school, and she's loving it. And I'm supporting her, and I'm encouraging her. And that's all you do. You encourage those you love. If you don't love them, don't encourage them. Don't support them if you don't love them. Help them be what they want to be. Help them find what they need to find in life. Help them fulfill that grace or passion that they've been blessed with. And work with them. Support them. Always be there to hear them. Always be there to support them.
Floyd, over half the kids today in America are being raised by single moms. And it's tough for single moms to have tough love. Talk, if you will, to single moms tonight about tough love.
That's the key. You have to. Kids know. Kids will challenge you if they think they can push you over or get you to do something. They will challenge you. That's where the tough love comes in. I have two kids. I tell the story. I told them I'd take them to Disneyland when they become 6 and 9. I'm not going to take you to Disneyland and have to carry you around and you can't ride on any rides. But we will be leaving Saturday morning at 8 o'clock. 8:01 is too late. Get yourselves up, get in the car, be ready to go when I leave. Every day I told them, we're leaving. And they say, I know Dad is 4 days. Yeah, I know Dad is 3 days. Yeah, I know Dad is tomorrow. At 8:05 on Saturday morning, I says, I'm heading down, and they're still in the bed. I pull out of the driveway and left them. I went to Disneyland by myself, brought them back a hat with their names on it, some cotton candy. And it's a tough thing to do. Go to Disneyland without your kids? I did. And they were 6 and 9, and they're 41 and 38 today. They've never forgotten it. And they always understood the purpose of that lesson. Of course, I took them to Disneyland a month later. But that was a time in their lives that I had to be tough. I had to say no. The things that they wanted that I didn't think was good for them, I said no. You're not getting them. I'm not buying that. And you're going to, you know, understand why one day. I have three very professional kids today. Love them. They talk to me on the regular. They look to me for advice. And have a great relationship with my kids. I talked to two of them yesterday. I'll be talking to my son when I hang up from this call.
One thing that you say over and over is, quote, I do not choose to be a common man. It's my right to be uncommon if I can. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I don't want to be just like anybody else. I want to be able to take a road that's less traveled. You know, I don't want to just follow along paths of somebody who leading you in the wrong direction, because that's the thing to do. I want to be able to say, hey, I don't want to go down this path. I don't think this is the right path for me. I want to go down another path. I want to be able to experience the challenges of life. I want to be able to do some things that are out of the ordinary. I want to take advantage of everything that God has offered me, the world has to offer. I want to take a chance on what life has to offer. I'm not going to just do it because everybody else is doing it. I want to be different. Uncommon is different, and that's what I want to be, different.
You're very involved with Youth Lifeline America, and you talk often to youth. What's the basic message, Floyd Little, you give to youth today?
It's an unbelievable experience being working with the kids couple hundred different cities throughout the country. It's based on teaching them life skills. It's not about sport, but it's about life skills. Being able to, because a lot of us don't make it to the next level. How are you gonna survive? Being a good husband, being a good son, being a good daughter, you know, just being good people. It's just so challenging today. So many things out there, so many opportunities to get in trouble or not to get in trouble. It's about the right choice. We talk about choices, making the right choices. If you want to be the best, you got to hang out with the best. If you want to be a better student and get better grades, you got to hang out with students who are better than you. If you want to be a better athlete, you got to hang out with athletes who's got better skills than you. Smart people surround themselves with people who are smarter than they are, and they learn from them. So I just want you to understand that it's about the right choices you make. If you make bad choices, bad things are going to happen. You have to look at where you want to be 30, 40 years from now. I know it's difficult when you're young, but there's sacrifices that you have to make. If you want to be successful the rest of your life, there's certain things that you got to pay attention to. Don't let anybody lead you down the wrong path. Choose to be different. You may have to choose to do some things that other people aren't doing. But if you look around, the people are on the same spot that they were 10 years ago. They're still there. You don't want to be there. You got to figure out how you're going to go on and do something, be somebody, help change the world. We are all obligated to change the world, leave it a better place than we find it. And take the challenge. See what happens, and never say I wish I had or I should have.
Floyd Little, you're a Hall of Famer in football, and more importantly, a Hall of Famer in life. Thanks very much for sharing your amazing and inspiring story. It's an honor to have you.
Thanks, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahol.